The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Gladwell. And now we have Gray Oldenburg back after a long hiatus, so glad to have Gray back. I guess he decided he was going to skip out on college football after what happened with Auburn, especially in the Iron Bowl with 4th and 31. He decided he didn't want to come on the show, especially that day.
Yeah, no, that would have been a bad show for me at least, but super glad to be back and here ready to talk some college basketball though.
Yeah, before we get started with the college basketball, I saw a story, and I know Nathan loves these stories. Doritos is selling a nacho cheese flavored liquor, Nathan. I don't know if you're going to go out and try it. I believe it's $65 for a 750-milliliter one. I know you're a big Doritos fan. Are you going to go out and get you some Doritos alcohol?
Alex, I have said this 1,000 times, and I'll say it again. I don't want any of this crap that they were putting out. I will never have it, and I never planned to have it. Just stop asking.
Is it a no from you as well, Gray?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. That sounds absolutely disgusting.
You don't want some nacho cheese in your alcohol?
No. That's not something, you know, Doritos. I love Doritos, love nacho cheese Doritos. That is never something that I would want combined or together.
All right. Let's just one more thing. Congratulations to Jacksonville State for winning their bowl game, the New Orleans Bowl, on a walk-off field goal in overtime. That was really exciting to see. Really competitive game from both teams. All right, let's talk about some college basketball. Alabama takes on number 8 Creighton, ends up losing 85-82. Nathan, you're the Alabama guy here. I'm going to let you take it away on what you saw in this game.
Well, I mean, heartbreak. You go on the road to Omaha, Nebraska to play Creighton. Very intense atmosphere. You got to give a lot of credit to their fans for showing up and showing out and being very loud. Alabama in this game was very, very competitive. We did not take a lot of threes, only 22 threes attempted in this game, but we didn't make a lot, only made 4. And that's really the main reason why we lost the game, not being able to strike it up from deep. That's Alabama's go-to usually, but we found other ways to score the basketball. I think we had like 50, 60 points in the paint, which was very, very crazy to see. But with Cockburner out for the pretty much first half of the game, it was easy to kind of get those points in the paint, and we took advantage of that. Going into the second half, we were back and forth, really. At one point, we had a 6-point lead, but it always felt like Creighton was biting at the heels, and we weren't able to really get any stops on defense consistently. Foul trouble again. Wagyu and Pringle both fouled out again, just like last week against Purdue. Foul trouble has been a huge problem here recently, especially with guarding centers. He can work well inside the painted area. But with this Alabama team, they were competitive, and I can get behind that. There's a lot more hustle that I saw rather than the past few weeks, especially opening up the season on the defensive end of the floor. Just got to be consistent on the offensive end. The three-pointers had to fall, and they just didn't in this game. And honestly, you're one shot away from having this game go into overtime. Mark Sears had a shot at the buzzer, and it rimmed out. I mean, it was so close to being in. But at the end of the day, Creighton took care of business and snuck out with a win. Alabama, their record's not looking good right now. Got another really, really hard challenge. You have to go to Phoenix to play Arizona Wednesday. That game is going to be super physical and competitive, I believe. Maybe Alabama can sneak out of there with a win, maybe not. But Alabama has played one of the toughest out-of-conference schedules so far in college basketball, and you got to give them credit there. And what Natives are trying to do is prepare his team to play this SEC gauntlet. And right now, there's a lot of missing pieces that need to be found. And if they're going to find that, I don't know. But you'll definitely see with this next upcoming contest against Arizona.
Yeah, Nathan, so you kind of brought that lack of size from Bama. You're playing Arizona next, you mentioned, and Arizona has, I believe, 4 7-footers on the roster. How do you think Bama's going to address this going forward? Because this is only going to get harder as you get deeper into the schedule.
Well, I expect the same deal from Nate Oates, Wagyu being out on the floor to start with, Pringle coming in off the bench. both of them pretty athletic and lengthy and good on the defensive end. Jaron Stevenson also gets a lot of minutes. He's pretty much Nets' closest guy. And then also you see a lot of Grant Nelson having to step into the five position when we do get into foul trouble or when people need to come out the four and take a rest. So I expect a little bit of the same things from Nate Oates. It's very hard for Alabama to compete. Losing Charles Bediako this offseason to the draft was probably the biggest loss. And I know Brandon Miller was crucial to what Alabama did, but not having a rim protector like Charles Bediako, not having a true seven-footer has really hurt this team thus far in the season.
Yeah, Gray, as an outsider, what do you think is the problem with Alabama and why they're struggling so far this season?
Nathan nailed it right on the head just then. Losing Charles Bediako, not having that true center and that dominant rim protector, especially on the defensive end for Alabama, has really, really hurt them. And it's the reason that this team has come very, very close, but has not gotten over the edge. And a lot of these games that I give Nate Oates and Alabama credit for scheduling this gauntlet, because yes, the SEC is a gauntlet, and Alabama is going to come into the SEC going, well, I mean, this is nothing new. We've been playing these type of teams all offseason, not offseason, but non-conference. So, but I think the loss of Charles Bediako this past offseason has really, really hurt. But I mean, you speaking on Creighton a little bit, Creighton coming off of a bad, bad loss to UNLV, it just didn't feel like their guards really, really played well in that game. And then playing against a very, very good Alabama team, it looks like Trey Alexander was playing better. Obviously, Shireman played really, really, really well in this game. But back on Alabama, this team has all the pieces outside of that dominant seven-footer inside, and they're going to play even more teams, just like you mentioned, Alex, going to Arizona, or basically to Arizona, to play them. They're a very big, very physical team, very talented team as well. So that's going to be a tough one. And then when you get in the SEC play, there's four or five teams that have really dominant centers at that five position that Alabama is going to have to game plan around. They're going to have to move people around. They're going to have to use Grant Nelson's quickness on the offensive end to their advantage on that, but they're also going to have to figure out things on the defensive end. Estrada and Sears have got to, I think last year, you know, it obviously, I think Brandon Miller was a better defender than somebody like Aaron Estrada is right now. Mm-hmm. But Mark Sears in particular understood that, if I get beat on the defensive end, I've got an eraser behind me in Charles Bediako. So it's not necessarily the end of the world if I go for a steal or something and take a chance in the defensive end. Now I feel like he can't do that. Otherwise it's 2 points for the other team at minimum. And I think that's hurting Alabama on the defensive end specifically. But look, this team's going to be prepared for SEC ball. They're going to be ready to play. They're going to come in. They're really good offensively. They just got to figure it out.
Yeah, talking about a little bit about Mark Sears, do y'all think he's a little bit timid in that game? Because he's really been the go-to guy for Alabama the entire season. But it felt like he wasn't really doing much until about 2-3 minutes ago in the game. And he was like, oh, crap, we're losing. I got to do something. And he started heating up a little bit. You think he's got to take more of that leadership role and sort of initiate the offense much more, rather than Grant Nelson, who's taken some really bad shots throughout the games he's been playing?
It could be a combination of low confidence. He didn't have three-pointers falling. I mean, he only made one, and that was very, very late in the game. So it could have lacked a little bit of confidence. Also, Nate is probably stressed swinging the basketball around, trying to find the open shot. And Mark Sears, being the leader, tries to focus on what Nate is as game planned around. And late in the game, he did pick it up and kind of found his own way to score. Mark Sears with the basketball in his hand is crucial to the team's success at the end of the day. You look at what he did versus Purdue and how much of a catalyst he was, really creating offense for others because he was so dominant. I like that Mark Sears. I like to see that, but I understand that can't happen every single game. I mean, he still finished with 19 on 9-16 shooting. It just didn't look as dominant as last week's performance.
Yeah. I don't think this game is any worry about Mark Sears. Mark Sears is going to make plays. Yeah, he's one of the best, if not one of the top guards in the SEC, if not the country. especially on the offensive end. You know, I was talking about him, how he doesn't look the same on the defensive end, but on the offensive end, he looks way better. And he was really good last year, but he looks way more comfortable. As far as like a leadership role, he does look like the leader out there. I think he just needs to understand that he's the guy. You're the guy. Brandon Miller was the guy last year. Sometimes it was Noah Clowney, but you're the guy this year. And I think offensively he understands that, but I'd love to see him kind of evolve his role into less of, knowing he's the shooter on the offensive end to, hey, look, you're going to be the difference in us winning games and us losing games.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to some Auburn basketball grade. They had a much better week than Alabama because Auburn picked up two wins, the first being against UNC Asheville and the other one being against USC. Talk about the UNC Asheville grade game. Go ahead. And what did you see in that with that one?
Look, I saw the depth from Auburn. Auburn's the deepest team in the SEC. They can play 11 deep, and there's not a team like UNC Asheville, who's a very good team and will end up being in the tournament. I think they've got their setup very, very well. Obviously, the plumber guy or whatever his name is, the long hair kid, he can flat out play. He's a pro. You see a team like UNC Asheville who's very, very good, but they are not as deep as Auburn was. And that's what happened. And saw Trey Donaldson and Katie Johnson and Chad Baker Mazzara coming off the bench playing as well as they did, especially when a guy like Jani Broome has 6 points, Jalen Williams has 8 points. Aiden Holloway doesn't shoot the ball very well from three. Denver Jones doesn't shoot the ball well from three. Okay, well, let's just put in the bench in and we'll blow them out. Because that's really what happened. Once Katie Johnson and Trey Donaldson stepped on the floor, it was a different basketball game. Plimmer was going back and forth with us for the first 5-6 minutes. And then when Katie and Trey came in, Auburn started pressing. And it was like UNC Asheville couldn't get the ball across half court. And the depth of this team, the fact that they can go 11 deep and not miss a step. And I know the starting five are the more talented players and the more consistent players, but the fact that this team is so deep is the reason that they're going to be one of the top teams in the SEC this year.
And then on the USC game, Gray, what did you see, especially coming with USC having highly touted recruits like Isaiah Collier and Bronny James?
Yeah, USC is coming in with, three, top NBA prospects, and Isaiah Collier is the number one player in the country. Obviously, Bronny James, I know he's playing on a minute restriction coming off his cardiac arrest, and that's like his second or third game of his college career. And then you got Boogie Ellis, who Auburn fans are really familiar with. Boogie Ellis played against him when Auburn beat Memphis back in 2021, and then played against him last year when Auburn went to USC and lost. And Boogie Ellis has gone for 30 points both of those times previous to this, and Boogie Ellis continued to play very, very well. He was the main concern for this Auburn basketball team coming into this game, but I think you saw it's the exact opposite of the UNC Asheville game. The UNC Asheville game, starters came in not shooting the ball well, and so the bench came in and played really well. Well, this game, the starters were playing very, very well and shooting the ball very, very well. Denver Jones looks like he's starting to get his confidence back up. Aiden Holloway is the best, one of the best freshman point guards in the country. Jalen Williams looks like his confidence is rising. Obviously, Jani Broome didn't shoot the ball really well, especially from a middle lane area when UNC or USC went to play zone. Didn't have that push shot go for him in. Go for him very well. But again, Jani Broome doesn't play well. Dylan Carwell comes in, steps up, and looks like a starting center. It looks like he could start anywhere else. Has 11 points. That's the best game I've ever seen Dylan Carwell play. So it's just the depth of this team and the fact that they can go 11 deep and not miss a step with a single player. It is huge. And playing a team like USC, who's very isolation and very – just try and get their stats, and those three players with Ellis, Bronny, and Collier. It was they tried to do everything. They tried to do everything, especially on the offensive end. And Auburn's just a better basketball team than USC, and they showed it.
Nathan, I asked Gray the same question about Alabama. What are your thoughts as an outsider on what the Tigers have done this season?
You talk about their bench staff. I mean, most box scores they have are a mile-long receipt of people being able to come in the game and score the basketball, and that's always going to help you at the end of the day. One thing I have noticed is Kenai Broome struggling in some scenarios, especially shooting the ball. And I wanted to ask Gray, how do you feel like you could improve his confidence going into SEC play? Because as of right now, from what I've seen, he's really struggled in some of the games he really should have had dominant performances in.
Yeah. Yeah. So Janai seems to have lost his mental. Basketball is all mental. But Janai has really seemed to have lost his confidence. I attended the Virginia Tech game, the ACC SEC challenge. There, Auburn hosted Virginia Tech, and Janai Broome had 30 points and 13 rebounds. And it looked like, it looked like he knew that he was the best player out there, and everybody else did. And they just kept going to him and going to him and going to him. And since then, he has not gotten over that hump and gotten back to that point, because it seems like he's getting these close shots and we're getting them, getting him the ball in these great situations. And there's just not falling for him. I think it's a bit of a confidence thing. Especially in the USC game, USC was playing Janai Broome very, very well, forcing him, outside of the semicircle, not letting him get confidence on the inside, making him shoot from, the mid-range area and the three-point shot, which Janai has shown in the first few games of the year. He has shown that his consistency and being able to hit his outside shot and step out and make a mid-range jumper or make a move. So it just seems like his confidence is a little off right now. Janai Broome is not a guy whose confidence is going to be down very long. If anybody's watched him before, he's got this confidence swag that just doesn't, you don't see in a lot of players at the college level, because there's players like Janai Broome that have it. I don't expect this little slump of his to last very long. I think what the slump has done, though, has allowed these SEC teams who are going to be able to watch, who are watching Auburn right now, to show how to guard Janai Broome, make him make those outside shots. If he makes the outside shots, you congratulate him and say good game. If he doesn't, then you've put the pressure on somebody like Jalen Williams or the guards with Aiden Holloway, Denver Jones, Trey Donaldson, that sort of thing. And if Auburn beats you like that, then you shake their hand, say good game. But you make Auburn beat you with their young and inexperienced guards like Denver and Aiden Holloway.
Yeah, I think Auburn reminds me a lot of Alabama last year, depth-wise at least. Because you can just, like Gray and you've mentioned, Nathan, you can just go out there and put a platoon switch. Let's put in Katie Johnson, Baker Mazzua, and all those guys and not have to worry about it. So I think that's really going to benefit Auburn going into SEC play, because they can just battle it out. And, like Gray mentioned multiple times, if the starters are struggling, just put in the bench and they can sort of alleviate that struggle they're having. Yeah. Some other big games this week. First one we'll kind of hit on here is number 14, Kentucky beat number 9, North Carolina, 87-83. Gray, me and you are kind of the North Carolina fans here. What are your thoughts on the Tar Heels thus far into the season? They did lose to UConn a couple weeks ago, or I think last week, and then they lose to Kentucky here in a close game.
Yeah, and I look at North Carolina is a lot in a situation in terms of scheduling, a lot like Alabama is. They have a very tough non-conference schedule. I think Alabama's is considerably tougher. I think there's not one tougher than Alabama's, but North Carolina is continuously playing these top tier teams like UConn, like Kentucky. They'll play Oklahoma this week. And they just keep playing them. But North Carolina is a very, very experienced team. Very few players on that team are young, I'll say, but inexperienced, particularly. Really, Cadeau is the only one that you're like, well, he doesn't have experience in doing that. Oh, he's young and that sort of thing. It's an old team. They're going to get it figured out. If they shoot the ball well from three and stay healthy, they're one of the top teams in the country because of what they have in Armando Bacot, because of what RJ Davis brings, because of what Cormac Ryan has been able to do thus far through the season. They are one of the top teams if they shoot the ball well from three. If they don't, they can get beat by anybody. They can get beat by some women's basketball team if they don't shoot the ball well from three. So that's going to be the story of North Carolina this year. I like the way they competed against Kentucky. I think Kentucky's more filled with NBA players than North Carolina is. And North Carolina has really built their team around Armando Bacot and RJ Davis this year. And just like I said, they shoot the ball well from three, they beat anybody. But if not, they can't.
Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Tar Heels? And then you look at Kentucky here and what they've been able to do, especially with their two guys off the bench and Rob Dillingham and Reed Shepard. What are your thoughts on both those?
Well, most games they struggle producing offense, and that's simply because they can't hit the three ball. It's honestly a lot like Alabama last year. Armando Bacot has had games where he's just been so crucial to the team's success, and then other times it's just like the dude needs to pass the ball. Alex, you can talk about it because this game in particular, down the stretch, Armando Bacot tries to do too much. And crucial possessions late in the game that really cost the team points. And at the end of the day, it causes them to lose. So Armando Bacot, I'll compare him to Grant Nelson because Grant Nelson has this problem as well. They need to learn to create offense for other people late in the game and get other people going, people who have good outside shots. And really, if shots aren't falling, they're probably not going to win. That's just how it goes. For teams who shoot the three-pointer all the time. But in order to actually have success like that, you need to find the guy who is going to hit that three-pointer. And North Carolina has a ton of guys like that. RJ Davis is the first one who comes to mind. So I'm not saying that this team's going to have a down year or they're just not going to be successful. But in order to have that success, you need to create the offense and consistently run it and work through it rather than just getting it to one player and say, hey, go ahead and ISO for me, because that's just not going to work.
Yeah, Armando Bacot, it's really a struggle to watch him play it sometimes because he'll get in the paint, he'll start hooking up hook shots and under the basket shots with like four people on him, and he doesn't even get close. It's like he thinks he's Zach Edey height and like that kind of frame, and he's just not. Like you said, Nathan, he's going to learn to create offense for other people. RJ Davis has really been on a tear lately. I think he's had 25 plus points in, I want to say, four or five games, something like that. He's been really good. Elliot Cadeau has been fairly disappointing for me. I don't know what's going on. He doesn't really initiate the offense as much as you would want him to. Seems very timid at times. I know he's a freshman, so that's going to come with the territory, but he's just really struggled lately. He refuses to shoot the three-pointer. I don't know. As a guard, why you don't shoot a three-pointer, especially as highly recruited as he was, you expect him to be able to shoot, especially in this day and age. As a guard, you got to be able to shoot the three-pointer, otherwise you're a liability. That's what really comes down from North Carolina is you look at their guards. Cadeau doesn't shoot three-pointers. Trimble really doesn't look for him. I know he hit one in this game. And then Wojcik, I don't know what he's doing. He's all over the place. But it really just comes down to RJ Davis and Cormac Ryan. And then sometimes Harrison Ingram at the four to hit these three-pointers. And we don't have somebody else that can come in as sort of a three-point specialist. You're going to struggle a lot. And that's what happened in North Carolina. Is there too post-centric for my liking for them to be able to succeed further in this season? All right, guys, Kentucky did end up winning this game, and they've been having a pretty good season. What are your thoughts on the Wildcats?
Kentucky is, when I was talking about this game, I was like, Kentucky's really full of NBA players. They always are. They're always going to have NBA talent. Dillingham's going to be an unbelievable player. I think I've been kind of shocked of Kentucky's depth and what their bench production has been able to do. I wasn't expecting Reed Shepard to play the way that he's been playing. Kentucky's always going to be very, very good, yada, yada, yada. I think I've been impressed with how Kentucky's meshed together. That's never been a thing that Kentucky's done very well because they get four or five five stars every year that all have played as the guy on their high school and AAU teams, and they come in and of course, they're unbelievably talented and they're going to win games because they're unbelievably talented, but they don't mesh very well and they don't play as a team very well. And that's kind of been the story of the past 5-6 years for Kentucky. But this year they've really come together. I think they're playing really well together this year. You give credit to John Calipari for that, obviously. He has not been very good at that the past few years. I'll continue to make fun of Kentucky and make fun of John Calipari, but give credit where credit is due. They've looked much better than I thought they were going to look so far this year.
Nathan?
Extremely young and talented. Just being able to have guys who just come off the bench and find their shot instantly, definitely a huge booster in that part. But the way that Kentucky just continues to recruit and having these top classes mm-hmm. and have these guys come in and then just instantly being able to compete in these huge games against these really stacked teams, just based off how talented people are, it's insane to me. Calipari is a really good coach. He prepares them very well for games like this, especially this North Carolina game. They just came out and they were ready. This Kentucky team, they're going to go far just simply based off the chemistry they already have to this point in the season and the way that they're being able to shoot the basketball. I know it's a really up and down game and some days you're going to be spot on. Some days you're going to be off from the 3-point line. But Kentucky has multiple different ways of scoring the basketball and really can just take advantage of wherever their opponent is weak at. So I expect this Kentucky team to be one of the best in the country late in the season. And we'll see how the tournament goes for them because that really hasn't been their strong suit as of late. But Calipari definitely has the coaching experience to get them through that as well.
Yeah.
I think this might be one of Calipari's best coaching jobs in his career thus far with this team. They're all young. They're all sort of like you mentioned, Gray, sort of figuring out who they are, how they fit together. And they're really winning these big games like they did against North Carolina. So I think this might be one of his best coaching jobs, regardless of if they win the national championship or not. All right, the other game, a national champion winner, UConn from last season, beats Gonzaga in the Fighting Drew Timmies, 76-63. Guys, you look at UConn, they did lose their center from last year, and then they also lost Jordan Hawkins. Do you think they have the chance to repeat with how they're playing? They beat North Carolina, like I said, I believe last week, and then now they beat Gonzaga.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Donovan Clingan, their center that they're praising right now. I think he's just a big, tall drink of water and, he's talented, but he's not what, Adama Sinogo was last year for them. And then the loss of Jordan Hawkins really, really hurts because of what he was, as like a 3-and-D type of player, but you gotta give credit to UConn. UConn is looking as good as they did last year. And I know Gonzaga isn't what they have been the past few years with Drew Timmy and yada, yada, yada. But UConn's as impressive as they look. This win against Gonzaga, if you watch this game, it was not as close as the score told it was. Ryan Nembhard was the only reason Gonzaga scored over 40 points. UConn was dominant in this game and they've continued to be dominant and win these really good games and win against these tough battles. I think if they, get Castle back out of that minute restriction after he had, I believe, a knee trouble, their freshman point guard, he is impressive. I know he's not a threat from the three or anything, but he is really, really good at controlling that offense. I think he's one of the better freshmen in the country. This UConn team has the ability to do it again. Obviously we're a long ways away from that. They don't have a tough schedule coming up. Right now is going through their hardest part of their schedule, but UConn's always going to be there. They're always going to be a threat. And right now they're up there for me in terms of favorites to repeat.
I think it's crucial to talk about UConn's ability to reload, especially this offseason. You talk about the loss of Hawkins. I think that was very detrimental to the offensive part of the production. The way he shot the three ball was very crucial to the team's run last season with their national championship. So their ability to just plug and play people to this point in the season, especially against a Gonzaga team who might be young, but they are still a talented team. It really proves to me that UConn can consistently compete no matter who is playing. UConn being a title favorite this season, I think that's realistic. Repeating is very, very hard to do in college basketball. And we're here in December. There's a lot more basketball left to be played. You don't know what's going to happen. Injuries are part of the game as well. So I wouldn't say I would pick them to repeat right now, but they're definitely up there as title contenders.
Yeah, talking about title contenders, guys, thus far through the season, who do you think your title favorite would be or favorites?
Oh, that's very, very tough because obviously it's, you know, we're a long ways away from that, just like Nathan just mentioned. And a lot of basketball to be played, a lot of factors come into play. I'm not going to say UConn because of the simple fact that after them winning the national championship last year, they're on everybody's head. They're on everybody's "we want to beat them" board. And they weren't really on that last year. You know, that kind of helped them go make that run. Yeah, that is part of the game. That's how it goes. I really like how deep and front heavy Kansas is. I think Kansas, if they can make the three ball, they're very good and they're very dangerous. Also like how talented Arizona is and how experienced Arizona is and the way that they're playing. If they run through the Pac-12, it's going to be hard not to be like, oh, well, Arizona's the easy pick here. And then, of course, you got teams like UConn and Houston. And, you know, you always got to consider how good they are. But I think we're a long ways away from that. I think I'll say Kansas just to name one, because if they shoot the three ball well, I don't think there's a team that beats them. But hey, we're a long ways away from that. There could be teams that completely fall apart, and there's teams that will rise up and join the party up in these contenders.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to think Purdue right now. I know after last season, losing to 16 seed Fairleigh Dickinson, but the way Zach Edey is just been able to play to this point in the season, just absolute dominance in the paint, gets whatever calls he wants. I mean, I don't know how much he's playing the officials. He'll get tapped on the wrist and he flails his arms and he'll get to the free throw line 20 different times for that. But then you talk about Braden Smith being able to create offense, just stellar from 3-point range, and the amount of bench depth that Purdue has sort of to discover to this point in the season. I think they can be that team come around in March and into April. But after last season, you also got to think these teams are going to be coming after you. These teams are going to be looking at Zachy and say, how do we guard this? And they're going to especially game plan for you. I think Purdue is definitely very, very talented. But if they're going to win the national championship, it's going to fall on the shoulders of Zach Edey to continue to perform the way he is performing. And consistency is very, very hard in college basketball. So I don't know if they can do it, but that would be my pick as of right now.
Yeah, I think for me, when I think about March Madness and everything, the teams that really win these games are the teams that have their guard dominate. And Kansas doesn't have that dominant guard. I don't think Juwan Harris is going to light somebody up. Look at Purdue. I know Braden Smith and Fletcher Loyer have done great things, but they've always faltered when the lights get bright in March Madness. And I really look at Arizona, who has North Carolina transfer Caleb Love, who had an amazing run a couple years ago for North Carolina. And I look at them, they had their bench depth with those 4-7 footers, so they can match up with somebody like a Purdue who has Zach Edey or like a Kansas who has Hunter Dickinson, and I think they can defend them really well. So for me, I look at Arizona, and they have the recipe and everything to have success when it comes time for March. And I really think they will get that chance too. And I hope they find success. All right, Gray, the AP poll. Auburn wasn't in the top 25. They weren't even the first team out. So they weren't at 26. That was Miami. They were technically 27. What's going on there?
You know, I have no idea. We had issues with the AP poll 2 years ago, and the AP poll, let me preface this before I just go on a little rant here. Like, AP bill doesn't mean a thing. There's no, the only thing that it means is the little number beside your name on the scoreboard. That's it. It doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't have anything to do with bracketology. When the brackets come out and the seeding is happening, the AP poll is not, it has nothing to do with it. It is not recognized at all. So it's just a bunch of sports writers for individual teams and the national sports writers that vote and submit their ballots as their top 25. And then the votes are compiled between the 100 something sports writers that vote on it and compiled into a top 25. So Auburn 8-2. I don't know what else they have to, I don't think there's 25 teams playing better than Auburn right now. It's hard for me to name 20 or maybe even 15 teams that are playing better than Auburn right now. Especially if you consider, in terms of offensive ratings and defensive ratings. So Auburn is one of, I believe, 8 schools that are top 20 in both offensive and defensive ratings. Talking about percentage and talking about efficiency and who they've played, and that takes in like your strength of schedule and strength of record, that sort of thing. So that's one of the biggest like computer metrics that there is. Auburn is one of 8 schools to be ranked inside the top 20 for both. I think the other seven.
It's Houston, Purdue, UConn, Arizona, BYU, Marquette, and Auburn.
So I believe 6 of those are ranked inside the top 8 in the AP poll. BYU, I think, was ranked 16 or 17.
17.
And then Auburn's down at 27. I don't understand that at all. And then you look at the KenPom ranking, which is another computer-generated metric, and Auburn is 8th in the country. Yet they're 27th in the AP poll. They're above teams like Kansas and UConn in the KenPom. But Kansas and UConn, they wouldn't dare not rank those two. They wouldn't dare. I just think that, you know, that's just my little rant for the day. And I just think every AP, every person that votes on the AP is a coward.
That was basically me last season. I mean, he summed it up pretty well. But Alvin, to this point in the season, I don't really care about the AP poll. I just want us to win basketball games, which has proven to be much harder than it looks. But as far as them keeping Auburn out of the AP poll, it's stupid. There are a ton of teams that are in there that are just not even remotely close to playing as well as Auburn is. And it's stupid. But at the end of the day, like you said, great, the poll doesn't matter. The people who vote for the poll don't matter. And at the end of the day, I really shouldn't care about it at all. But the little number next to your name, even though it might not mean anything come March, it looks very, very well when you can say, hey, look, I got a number one next to my name. You don't have anything, that's your name. Yeah. It's one of those things. But at the end of the day, who cares? Yeah. I mean, I'm waiting for March.
Yeah. Gray, I asked Nathan this question last week. Me and Nathan both answered it, or both these questions. Who's been the most surprisingly good team thus far? Who's been the most surprisingly, I guess, we kind of rewarded it, not bad, but faltering on expectations?
Yeah, okay. So disappointing, I'm going to go with Michigan State, because what in the world are they? They were ranked inside the top 25, top 15. I don't know where
they
exactly.
I think they were 3 or 4.
Yeah, they're unbelievably high. And then they came in very obviously hyped up and all, lost to James Madison at home. And then they've just fallen off the face of the earth. I know they've absolutely annihilated Baylor this past week. I don't know what abomination happened to Baylor, because Baylor's been very, very good. But Michigan State has not been what we thought we were going to see from the Tom Izzo Michigan State team this year. As far as the team that's really been surprising, and good. I know Arizona was ranked, you know, high coming into the year, and they were expected to be very, very good. I don't think anybody expected Arizona to be the best team in the country. And I do believe that right now they are the best team in the country, the deepest team in the country, and the most well set up team in terms of March. And just like I said, when we were talking about who we think are the title contenders and that sort of thing, if Arizona runs to the Pac-12, they're the overall number one seed, and it's not close. And I don't care what Kansas or Purdue or Houston or UConn do in their respective conferences, Arizona is the most impressive team in the country. I think they've kind of shocked me a little bit. You know, I didn't know how well the Caleb Love thing would work after watching him this past year at North Carolina specifically. But they're very, very good, very, very talented, very, very deep, and they're set up very, very well. So I'm going to go with Arizona as my kind of surprise. I know that's not like a big jump. They haven't jumped into the rankings or anything like that, or surprised anybody, but they've surprised me on how dominant they've been.
All right, as we get out of here, guys, I know it's really early in the season. Some teams are playing difficult parts of their schedules and are now heading into conference play, but who's the Wooden Award frontrunner for you? Is it just Zach Edey default?
Pretty much. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter who plays the game of basketball, because Zach Edey is going to have 30 points off of just standing in the paint and throwing the ball 2 inches into the hoop. So they'll donate him the award like they do every year. It's basically Drew Timmy all over again.
Yeah, it's all about the stats and the fact that he it's his name. And in fact, that he plays for Purdue. But if I had to go away from Zach Edey, like we were talking about when we were talking about North Carolina, RJ Davis has been outstanding, and he's getting better, and he's really shooting the ball well from outside. He looks like he's really taken that role, especially with Elliot Cadeau not living up to what we kind of thought he was. I know he's very, very young, but RJ Davis has been outstanding. He's going to get better. If that North Carolina team really runs the table and goes through and wins the ACC or something like that, I think you got to consider RJ Davis.
Yeah, it's been kind of weird because lately it's been basically the big man award for the Wooden Award. And it used to be the guard award. I remember, I believe Frank Mason won one time, and there was, was it Trey Burke at one point? And it's really just gotten to where it's just like, okay, center has all these double doubles, good stats. Let's just give it to him by default. Yeah. You know, look at the NBA. The centers that are winning these awards are not having NBA careers. Zach Edey, I'm sorry, will not have success in the NBA if he can not shoot the three pointer. He'll basically be a worse Rudy Gobert, and Rudy Gobert is about on his way out the way he plays. So I just think this award has gotten away from the players that have really been successful for their teams, and Zach Edey just gets it because he gets double doubles every time because he's 7'5" and just stick his hands up in the air. Oh, I got three down. All right, so that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.